You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Colt Molesky back in the studio hosting another pod, and this time I have Dane Moore on the line. He has just fairly recently joined the Zone Coverage staff, writing basketball over at Zone Coverage, and he is now coming on the podcast. He'll be a regular here pretty often, and it's great to have you on. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Colton. I just left practice today. The Wolves had a long practice today. We had to wait around an hour. It went an hour long, and then we got a chance to talk to Tibbs and Boz. Jamal Crawford talked to us for a little bit, and yeah, the team's about to take off and head to California this evening.
And you guys had Jamal Crawford on Wolves Wired recently with some big news for the Zone Coverage staff in a fun podcast.
Have you had a chance to listen to that yet, Colton?
Yeah, I was real jealous.
Dude, he is he's the man. I don't know. Anybody, if you haven't listened to it, like, I'm not just, like, trying to pump the pod. Like, read as much stuff as you can about Jamal Crawford. Listen to as many Jamal Crawford interviews as you can. He is, like, hands down just the nicest guy I've ever covered in the league.
Super laid back,
too. The guy
too.
Who have been doing it. What was that?
Super laid back, too.
Yeah, man, he's just, and it's like authentic, you know. I think sometimes with Towns and Wiggins, they're so new to this whole media exposure. They've had the camera in their face their whole life that I don't want to say they're being fake, but they're really calculating the things they say and thinking about the way in which they're going to be perceived. And with Jamal, and maybe this comes with being like almost 20 years older, he is he's just authentic, and what's on his mind, he's going to talk about. Not in like a pejorative way or anything like that, but he's just honest and, you know, kind of to the point. He's had a lot of experience and has a lot of just a lot of insight. It was really the best podcast I think I've ever been a part of. So check that out on Wolves Wired, and we recorded that Monday afternoon. So check that out. It's great.
Yeah, definitely. You can actually, when you pull up the Zone Coverage page, the Wolves page, it's right up there, right at the top of the page. So definitely go and check that out. We should probably move on to actual basketball talk, but I did want to just mention, he reminded me a little bit of when Bill Simmons is doing the talks with Kevin Durant. Well, there's some guys who fall in between, but there's either you're super reserved and kind of pulled back like a LeBron James, or you're fine with exposing yourself and letting a little bit of your personality hang out there. And he just seems very comfortable in his own skin, very comfortable with his opinions being out there and not having to be reserved or pull away from the media. He just seemed very comfortable in that setting, which is a setting that not all athletes, professional athletes, feel comfortable in. And so that definitely made it a nice sounding podcast, and I'm sure it was fun doing interviews with him and talking with him for that time.
Yeah, I mean, he's just established, and same thing with KD is, you know, they've been in the league for a long time, and their identity or who they are, they feel pretty confident in that, and I think that just comes out in interview form. And Jamal's always like that. Like he every time I've talked to him at practice or games or whatever, he's kind of that same person. So yeah, again, do check that out. But we could talk about some more Wolves. They're on a 5-game winning streak.
Oh my goodness!
Going to Golden State—that's weird.
I was talking with Mitch yesterday about this, and we were noting I was 14 when they were on a 5-game winning streak, and he said he was a freshman in high school, I believe. So just the amount of time that something—I don't want to say as small, but not as huge as maybe making the playoffs, but a 5-game win streak that has taken so long to get back to for the Timberwolves. So it's a big deal, I would say. I would classify it as a big deal just because of the length of time that it has taken to find success like this again.
Well, one thing that Kent Youngblood from the Star Tribune mentioned to me was that the last time the Wolves were on a 4-game winning streak, their starting lineup was Luke Ridnour, Alexei Sfed, Andre Kirilenko, Dante Cunningham, and Nikola Pekovic.
I'm sure that was somebody's entire fantasy basketball team at some point, right? Of course.
Well, they probably lost every game if that was their fantasy team. But I did love that those Wolves team. I called them the White Wolves. It was just like all European dudes and white dudes and Dante Cunningham. It was that team was interesting.
Wow, that was a team for the ages for sure. I can't believe I didn't even think about that. I can't believe that was the last team that had a 4-game winning streak. That's crazy.
It's sad, mostly. That's the emotion I have.
it is a bummer. It really is. Going into the Warriors and just looking at this offense, 6th-ranked offense in the league, averaging 109.4 points per game. They look really good. They look very crisp. I think Teague has really found a rhythm in the offense. It looked like he was a little bit disjointed the first few games, but now he's found a real rhythm. Butler and Wiggins has been probably my favorite thing to watch, just how they play off each other. It's been really fun to see them click right from the Spurs game to start the season. If you're looking just at the Wolves' offense, and we'll get to the defense in a second, but the Wolves' offense, what things do you really like? What things are they running really well, really efficiently? What are they doing better, even from the start of the season, from the Spurs game? And then what are they just better at because of the players they have?
Well, to touch on your Teague thing first, I think when we talk about you use the word disjointed, and he was kind of, finding himself. And I think as much as all of us watching have been really surprised by Butler taking this facilitator type role, and not scoring as much, working on distributing, I think maybe that's been a little bit of a surprise for Jeff Teague, too, is, he's the point guard. So that was maybe assumed that he would have more of a distributing role. But with Jimmy kind of taking on so much of that, I think that has been a bit of an adjustment period for Teague. When you look at the other teams he's played on, he has been that primary ball handler, particularly in Atlanta. When you look at those teams, there weren't other wings who were even really strong dribblers. They were setting up around him. They were working on off-ball action around him. So I think we need to be patient with Teague as he gets comfortable in not only being the point guard, but also that an off-ball threat is something he hasn't done as much of in his career, to my understanding. So obviously he's looked great. The Hornets game, he was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I said it was like, we haven't seen, like, F.U. Teague. That was the first time. It was like, it seemed like there was something going on with him and Kemba there, or a long-lasting rivalry, or I'm just making stuff up. But when the two of them were going back and forth and Teague, like, decisively won that, I think it was in the second quarter, it was impressive. That was a question, going into the regular season, obviously. We've droned on about the Teague versus Rubio comparison, but just really where Teague falls in the hierarchy of point guards in the NBA, I think, was a question for many Timberwolves fans. Playing the majority of his career in the Eastern Conference, if you're somebody who is a diehard Wolves fan and you watch every single Wolves game, you still would have only seen 15 Jeff Teague games in your whole life, and he's been in the league for 9 years. So that's... We didn't have that much exposure to Jeff Teague, and I think we're learning the type of player he is as fans, as people who follow the team, and he's certainly growing on us, and maybe better than we expected by looking at his metrics or those sort of things. He is a dynamic offensive player that starts the offense the majority of the time for the Wolves.
Yeah, and I liked when I was looking at, and maybe I shouldn't have skipped over the Pacers season just because it's not like he played awful basketball with the Pacers. But when I was looking at Teague and what he did for this team, I went back and watched some of those games when the Atlanta Hawks won 60 games and were the number one seed in the East and looked really good with Al Horford, and you had Kyle Korver and all those guys on that team that made that so good. Paul Millsap was on that team. You had Damari Carroll, and he fit in with those guys. And so it took a few games, but he's able to play with big superstar talent. Real quickly, looking back with a little bit of hindsight now, are you fine with picking up Teague for Rubio, or do you think Rubio could do some of the things that Teague is doing in this offense?
Well, okay. The thing is you can believe that Ricky Rubio is a better point guard if you're just stacking up. If you're getting out your pen and paper and writing down, making a list of 1 to 20 who the best point guards are in the NBA. You can put Ricky Rubio above Jeff Teague, and that still doesn't mean that Jeff Teague is not a better fit for this team. I think the way in which we are watching the Timberwolves play this year is very indicative of the idea that Jeff Teague is the type of point guard that better fits this team. And we were talking about Jimmy Butler being the facilitator he is, and if that is to stay, which I assume will, at least to some extent, it's important to have an off-ball, somebody who can shoot off-ball or create around Jimmy Butler. And if you look at the beginning of last season when the Wolves kind of experimented with Wiggins kind of dominating the ball and kind of in a point guard role, Ricky was relegated to the corner, and that was at the beginning of the year, and he was really ineffective. He was a little banged up too, but I don't think Ricky would have had as much success as he could or is having in Utah in an off-ball role. So my belief is that Jeff Teague is a very good fit for the pieces that he's playing with. His ability to create in the mid-range, which doesn't mean get in there and shoot mid-range jump shots, it's his ability to kind of probe into around the elbow area, the circle right there, and look to pass and also shoot if that is there. That is a very good fit considering the other four players he's predominantly going to be playing with. So I'm really liking the fit. Would have it been fun to watch Rubio play with these other four guys that are substantially better than any other team he's played with? Sure. I don't think we need to pin the two against each other, though. So
I would love to pin the two against each other because as Tom has noted, I am a documented I have not been a fan of Ricky Rubio. I'm not going to say I'm a hater like Tom will call me, but I have not been a fan of Rubio. And just looking at the game the other day, Teague had 5 threes and made 4 of them. I know he hasn't been that good from 3 the entire season, but I don't think there was ever a time where I was super confident about Rubio and his shooting from the perimeter. And in this offense, you need all these guys to be doing a bunch of different things. So I love Teague, and I'm glad he's working out because I think Teague can do 4 or 5 different things on offense, just like Butler can do, just like Towns can do, and even to extent Andrew Wiggins can do quite a few different things on offense. And I think you've seen his role reduced, and he's played maybe 1 or 2 things really well, but he can still do those things, and that's what makes this offense so potent, is because you can't just pigeonhole these guys to one thing and then put a defender on them to defend that one thing. You have to have defenders to play these guys who are going to be able to defend a bunch of different shots, and that's what makes them so hard to defend. So that's what I love Teague, and I'm glad that he's playing well now, because I think that this offense is really fun because of his versatility and the versatility of all these guys.
I think it's important to remember that the Wolves were the 10th best offense last season too, and we're kind of getting giddy over being the 6th best offense right now. That's a step forward on last year, but it's not as if Rubio hurt the team last season. He's also balling out in Utah. The Jazz have been a good team as well, and he's fit in pretty seamlessly there. So I think we are pitting the two against each other. It's not Jeff Teague's played great, but so has Rubio, and there's not necessarily a sign that things would have been devastatingly worse if it were Rubio in place of Teague. So, again, I think if we are pinning them against each other, let's accentuate the positives of both of them. They've both had very good seasons through 3 weeks. So they're both good point guards, very different.
Oh, my gosh. Tom's right. Maybe I am a hater. I'm sorry. Ricky Rubio, I wish you all the best. And we're gonna take a look at some of the matchups in the Golden State Warriors game. But first, I wanted to dive into the defensive side of this team a little bit. So looking at the defense, I'm looking at the defensive rating here on NBA.com, and they're ranking 27th in the NBA in just a defensive range, just overall defense, and they're letting up 108.2 points per game. So if I'm looking at this team, the offense has taken a step forward, but not a huge step, like you mentioned. The defense, it's not the worst defense in the league like it was last year. I think they were 29th in the league for the most part. They were 30th for a hefty part of the season, but they've taken a baby step forward on defense. What makes this team so much better? What little things are doing that makes this team so much better end of game, and not just because the obvious they have Jimmy Butler on the team, but what little things are they doing defensively as a collective that is helping them pull out wins instead of lose games?
Well, I think the defense has improved since that second Oklahoma City game, and I think the the role of Towns is huge, and that's just kind of in general, especially in the NBA, the role of a rim defender and the impact they play is kind of like the core of the defense. I think he's looked better in the past couple of games. We saw a really frenetic version of him early on in the season, certainly trying to do too much, exuding a ton of energy defensively, but not really efficiently exuding his energy, and that led to inefficient defense as a whole. He was and has chased way too many blocks and kind of taken himself out of position, and that's hurt the team at times. But recently, the past couple of games, I think, have been an improvement. The biggest thing, if I'm a coach or trying to nail home one or two things, is for Towns to really focus on the area he is in and focusing in on his role that he plays. And I think a lot of the times when he starts getting in the mind of a secondary defender, when he's on the weak side or off the ball, that's when he can overexert himself and take himself out of position. So for him to really just slow down and say, this is where I need to be, I don't need to necessarily fill in holes around the defense as a whole as he has in past seasons when he was surrounded by much worse defenders, is he would do well to just trust the other four players around him more. And I think that's been particularly attacked by opponents or taken advantage of in the pick and roll, where that's an area where there's just so much reading to be taken in on Towns' part. I like to consider pick and roll defense kind of like an art form, and it's not necessarily specific. So there is some reading in there on his part, but if he can kind of trust and communicate with those other players, I think the defense is in a much better place, because there are solid defenders around him, at least in the skill sets they have. Obviously, Jimmy Butler, the Wolves have as one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. Andrew Wiggins has the skill set and has looked a lot better as a defender this year on and off ball. Taj Gibson gets it. He's a good perimeter defender for a four man. And Teague's not great defensively, but gets it too. So I think just trusting those four players and remembering that he's not surrounded by Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn and Shabazz Muhammad, young guys who don't necessarily understand defense at the NBA level. He would just do well to trust these guys a little more. And I think that defense rating is going to end up moving its way up a bit. For me, I think it needs to get around middle of the pack in the NBA for the Wolves to get into that 50-plus win range. It's very hard for teams to be in the lower 10 of the league and also be above 500. Last year we saw the Houston Rockets had the 18th best defensive rating. So they were in the bottom half of the league, but they kind of made up for that with a third best offense. So I think that's kind of the goal for the Wolves. If they can get right around that 15 to 18 range defensively, the offense would be good enough to buoy up the team to around 50 wins. But if they stay where they are now, it's impossible. They can't win 50 games. So.
Well, and like you're saying, a couple of the things, just trusting the teammates around you, just finding a rhythm on defense with guys, especially for Towns, it seems like. If you're doing that, and that's definitely obtainable this season over the course of the next couple of months, and you're just shaving off 2 or 3 points that you're letting up a game, that puts you right around 2019 mark, and that's, like you're saying, the middle of the road. So that's not a huge jump. I know going from 27 to 19 seems like a big jump, but if you're doing just a couple of those little things and just finding a little bit more of a rhythm on the defensive side, then you're right around middle of the pack if you're letting up just a few less points per game. And that definitely seems like an achievable goal for this roster with the talent they have, just the raw talent they have.
Yeah, and I think that Tibbs would say don't obsess about the result, and it's the idea of getting used to doing things, executing, as he would say, things in the right way. And with that, I think over time, extrapolated out, it begins to have those results that take off, lowers points per possession that you're giving up. Sure, the Wolves gave up less than 100 points the last three games, but it does need to be a little bit bigger of a sample size. Dallas is not good. Charlotte really struggled on Sunday, and it's going to be, I guess, a great test. The best possible test is going to be Wednesday against Golden State and figuring out how to slow that that Golden State team. And I think that the best way to do this, and this is kind of moving away from defense a little bit, is to slow the pace with them. If you try and run with Golden State, the Wolves have players who can run, but that's what Golden State wants to do. Slow them down, make them get to end of shot clock in their offensive possessions, and the Wolves using time too. When they're on offense, I think by slowing the game down is how you lower the effectiveness of that Warriors team. I was watching the last Warriors game against the Heat this morning, a playback of that, and while the Heat lost to the Warriors, they did do a good job of really slowing down Golden State to start that game, and that has a positive effect on a team like Golden State that wants to get out and run, get you out of position, and not be able to close out on the three-pointer. So there's one thing, a goal of that, of playing Golden State is to slow the pace, and when things get going, the Wolves will get taken advantage of in their transition D, because no team's better than Golden State at taking advantage of that.
And I did want to get into Golden State matchups with you in a second here, but really quick, yeah. I wanted to just have one more talk about the defense, just real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I have a theory on the Timberwolves' defense against bad teams that they're supposed to beat, which is teams that they're struggling, even teams they're supposed to beat, they're kind of struggling with last year. And it's that their defense is just good enough with Butler in there, and their offense is putting enough pressures on teams in the first half that they're forcing players to play isolation basketball. And so I'm looking at the Thunder game, and Russell Westbrook is fine with playing isolation basketball. That's why that game was tight. Both those games were tight in the fourth quarter. But if you're looking at the Mavericks, if you're looking at the Hornets or the Heat, those teams don't have the guys to play isolation basketball. And Deion Waiters looked pretty good for the Heat, but that he wasn't good for the entire duration of the game. He wasn't good at making other players good around him. So that's why they were able to handle them. They had the Mavericks, who just have too many young players to play isolation basketball. And then against the Hornets, they were forcing Lamb to play some isolation basketball. Kemba Walker, they were forcing into isolation shots, so he couldn't help the big guys get better. And that's how they're beating up against these teams that they're supposed to win games against, and they're putting distance between these teams. When you saw them slip in the fourth quarter last season, is they're forcing worse teams to play isolation basketball, and that's one of the keys when you're going throughout the season, is being able to flip the script on teams a little bit. Am I off on that, or do I have something there?
No, totally, and I think the goal is to force isolation basketball by the offense, but have it be a non-primary option. So most teams will come down, and if the general play set is a pick and roll, they're gonna run the pick and roll with probably one of their strongest offensive players. And if you can address that initial pick and roll and force the team to swing the ball out of that, you look at a team like Dallas, and that the ball ends up getting in somebody's hands who does not have a strong skill set in isolation. So you get it out of Harrison Barnes' hands, or in Charlotte, you get it out of Kemba Walker's hands. And as you said, then it's Lamb, and he's just not the type of player who is able to successfully isolate at a high level. So I think it's not just about forcing isolation, because we saw the Thunder take advantage of that with Melo and Westbrook. But if you can get it into the lesser players' hands, isolation basketball is the best thing you can force as a defense.
Well, yeah, and obviously when you're playing a team like the Rockets or the Thunder, when you have guys like Russell Westbrook or Carmelo Anthony or Paul George or James Harden, those guys are going to be fine playing isolation basketball, and you just got to figure out different systems. But when you're playing a team like the Hornets and Kemba Walker, part of his game is making other players better, and then you've got guys like Lamb and Dwight Howard who are good players, but they're good in an offensive system. Forcing the entire team to play isolation basketball is a nice tool to have in the Timberwolves' back pocket against lesser teams. And now I do want to talk about the Warriors, the Golden State Warriors. You mentioned it. It's the game they have tomorrow night after some rest. First of all, you were in the practice today. What's the feeling in the practice? Just because I feel like this is one of those teams that can go into the Oracle, and they, with the way they've played against the Warriors in the past, they feel like they can beat this team. It's not going into the Oracle and you've got to survive. They have a little swagger about them that they can beat this team. They can go in and hang with this team. Is that kind of the feeling around practice today?
Yeah, it was funny. Tibbs is like classic Tibbs, business as usual. Somebody asked if this game is more significant as it's against Golden State on a winning streak and on national television. And Tibbs' response was, yes, it is significant because it's the next game. And, I mean, just
I love
kind
it.
Of classic. Yeah. So I don't know. I think Tibbs and the coaching staff is trying to just nail into the players that every single game is important. And especially when you're trying to tally up somewhere around 50 wins, that this game is pretty much just as important as a game against the Mavericks, because a win is worth one in either matchup. So yes, for us as fans, this is a cool litmus test to see where the Wolves stack up against the Golden State Warriors, the defending champs. Jamal Crawford talked about that at practice today, about that litmus test. But really, I think it's business as usual. It's continuing to execute. Again, that is probably the word that comes out of Tibbs' mouth more than anything else. And it will be exciting for them to see execution against a team that's not only terrific offensively but also defensively in Golden State. But are they hyping it up? Are they treating it like a playoff atmosphere? Probably not. I think that would take the younger players out of the game a little bit. But I just taking Tibbs' words, man, it's business as usual.
No,
it's
yeah.
significant because it's the next game.
That makes sense coming from him. It's on to the Golden State Warriors, right?
Bill Belichick, right?
Exactly. Now, I have already said the matchup to watch is Jay Crossover versus the self-proclaimed gift to women, Swaggy P, off the bench. Those two going after it is the matchup to watch in this game. But from someone else, maybe a better matchup, who should Timberwolves fans be watching for matchup-wise for the Timberwolves and for the Golden State Warriors? And what is something that you're specifically looking for in this game to happen, or something you think could go down?
I think it's interesting, and again, I was watching the Warriors' last game against the Heat today, and I was thinking about how the Warriors are going to opt to match up against the Wolves. In that Heat game, we saw Klay Thompson match up against Goran Dragic, the Heat's best isolation-type player, and obviously Dragic is a point guard. Klay is more of a shooting guard wing-type player, but Golden State isn't afraid to kind of cross match up in that way. And I think it'll be interesting with so many threats that the Wolves have to see how Golden State opts to take away who they try and take away. Who is Klay Thompson going to be matched up? Is it going to be Wiggins or Butler? I'm not sure. And then if you're Golden State, what do you do with Draymond Green? Do you put him on Taj Gibson? Does that make sense? Taj is the least threat. The smallest threat the Wolves have offensively,
yeah,
and so are
sure.
you wasting the best defender in the league on Taj Gibson? Do you have him play out of position up onto Towns? Do you have him guard Wiggins or Butler? I think those things are interesting to see how they will attack that. My assumption is that Pachulia will initially match up with Towns, and people like to rip on Zaza, but he is like a fire hydrant in there and is very hard to move in the post-up game. So I think the Wolves would try and put Zaza on space with Cat pick and roll, or having Cat look to penetrate on Zaza. But yeah, I'm really not sure. I don't know. Maybe you have an opinion of how you see Golden State opting to match up with the Wolves. The Wolves are just interesting because they don't totally have specific positions. Wiggins and Butler are kind of interchangeable. Taj and Towns are interchangeable offensively, and then we just talked about Jeff Teague also playing off ball at times. So it's an interesting question.
Well, no, you're absolutely right, and this is just for people who just want to watch basketball all day, like you and I. This is going to be really fun just because of all the little matchups and the way they play each other, and the chess match between the two head coaches that this is going to be. Over the last couple weeks, I write the top 10 things I'm looking for storyline wise and matchup wise around the NBA every week. And the last couple of weeks, I've been kind of picking on Karl-Anthony Towns and his physicality. And the reason I've been doing that is because I think it's going to be really important this game that he's physical, because I think the Warriors want to run more Draymond at center than Pachulia, because then they go down to the other side of the floor and they've got him and Steph Curry, who can both act as kind of a point guard, and that messes with defenses so much. So if Draymond, he's the smaller guy, but if he can be really physical and intimidate Towns that way, then that creates an advantage for the Warriors. But if Towns can use his size and play physical with Draymond, then they're going to have to flip Durant over to, if they want to run that lineup, they're going to have to flip Durant over to Towns, and he's not as good in the paint as Towns is, especially when Towns is on offense. So it really, I think a lot of this game hinges on if Towns can play physical, because if there's a need midway through the game for Pachulia to come in just so they have a bigger guy who's going to be comfortable playing in the paint against a true center, then that messes up with their offense, because I feel like they definitely want to have Draymond out there. And you saw what happened to their offense against Houston when Draymond went out with that pulled ligament in his knee, and it was a little bit out of whack. And I think they run better when they have two point guards out there in Draymond and Steph Curry on the offensive side. So a lot of this hinges on Towns, and I only say that because I really do think the sky's the limit for his ceiling, and that if once he unhinges some of that physicality, he can truly be great and can really put the Warriors on their heels matchup wise and have them looking at a bunch of different things that they have to fix going into halftime.
Right, and I think the death lineup, maybe gets, as they call it, with Draymond at the five, is a little, I don't know what the right term is. Overrated isn't it. It just, they don't do it that much. Golden State doesn't, particularly during the regular season. Zaza's going to play a lot. Zaza's going to play 25 minutes, and then JaVale's going to play behind him. So it's not that we will never see Golden State use Draymond at the five, but they do play Zaza and McGee a bunch. So I don't know. It's interesting, but I would be kind of surprised to see more than 6 to 8 minutes of Draymond at center. And not that those 8 minutes aren't important, but it's something I'd be surprised to see Golden State do a lot, particularly against a team that has a very formidable front court in size with Towns. And Gibson is a physical force, too. When Golden State does go to that smaller lineup, It is a sacrifice in rebounding and physicality too, and by physicality I mean straight size. So I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily anticipate a ton of Draymond at the five in this game.
Well, that's kind of the question is too. I should have added this in. If you have Zaza Pachulia on Towns and Towns is playing really physical and playing well against Pachulia, and then he adds in he in the first half he hits one or two threes. Is Pachulia going to be able to have that range? Because then I think if Towns is not only beating him in the paint, but also stepping back and hitting the long shots, then I really think you probably have to put Durant on him just so you have somebody who's really long and really quick to get out to the perimeter and play him outside, and maybe you just take the loss in the paint if you're the Warriors. I don't know how you feel about that, but I can see throughout the game maybe two or three different guys guarding Towns depending on how he plays and what shots he's hitting.
Well, I think just from a Wolves standpoint, it would be good to see Towns make three threes in a game. I don't think we've seen that yet. He's been a bit cold from three. That's the best way the Wolves can attack a team that's really big on the interior. I remember last year against Dallas a few times. Dallas had Andrew Bogut, Salah Mejri, and kind of Dirk, who were playing five for them. That was their five-man rotation, and none of those guys can get out in the perimeter. And you saw the Wolves attack that with running Towns off screens towards the corner three or up top. They would run a pick and pop for him, and those bigger players can't guard Towns in that type of action, but to take advantage of that, Towns needs to be able to make the three, and we know Towns is capable of that. The second half of last season he shot well above 40% from three, but if there's one area of the offense, not that I'm concerned about, but that just hasn't been there, is Towns' ability to knock down the three. So, yeah, if the first quarter can get a couple of Towns threes by stretching Zaza out to the perimeter, that is going to open up a ton of room for the offense. We haven't seen a game like that where Wiggins is clicking, Butler is distributing, and Towns is hitting threes. that's when the Wolves offense becomes completely potent and one of the best in the league. So I would look for that right away in the first quarter to be running Towns off of screens to get to the corner three or the pick and pop on top with Teague to hit some above the break threes.
Well, and he only has to hit, what, two of those in the first half, and then they really start pulling the defense out of the paint to try and defend that, and then you have Wiggins and you have Butler cutting into the basket, and he can just pump and then pass.
Right, and it's outside in with him, too. We haven't seen a ton of Towns post-ups, and I wonder if the come in to him hitting a couple threes, and they're defending that pick and roll differently, or they're getting out on more, and then is when the Wolves would look to go inside more to Towns. But there's just been very few straight post-ups to Towns, which we know isn't the most efficient type of basketball to play, but with a weapon like Towns who can convert that at such a high rate, I think that's the goal of the Wolves, is establish him on the three-point line, then look to punish the interior with Towns.
It'll be a great game, and there will be plenty of matchups to watch. Do you have anything coming up as we head out here? Do you have anything coming up, any writing or any Locked On Wolves stuff that you have to promote?
Yeah, so I'll be writing tomorrow morning for Zone Coverage just about this Warriors matchup and starting out hot. I was going through and started writing it this morning, and last season only one team in the league had a six-game winning streak that didn't make the playoffs, and that was the Miami Heat, who kind of infamously went 30-11 the second half of last season. They won 13 games. But every other team that went on a six-game winning streak during the regular season last year made the playoffs. And so the idea was always that the Wolves were going to be a playoff team this year, but now it really seems real with this winning streak and starting 7-3 and two of those three losses without Butler. The Wolves are whatever, the fourth in the power ranks. They're up there. And so it's really what I'm writing about tomorrow is looking at them as a playoff team and kind of specifically how important the bench is in the playoffs. And that's something that's so foreign to us. We haven't seen playoff basketball with the Wolves team in so long is that playoff basketball is very different. And the bench is important in that too. And we know the rotation can shrink in the playoffs, but it's important to have a lot of different types of bench options. So we've seen Bielitsa be great off the bench so far, but some other options is what we would like to see from the Wolves, and whether that's Boz and Jamal and the other players there. So I'll kind of be writing about the bench and with an eye on the playoffs. So that'll be on Zone Coverage on Wednesday morning in advance of the Warriors game.
Awesome. I love it. Definitely everybody should go check that out. Go check out the Jamal Crawford interview on Wolves Wired. I totally forgot about this, but I wanted to hear your take. In 30 seconds, is Bledsoe good for the Bucks? Traded for Monroe.
Yeah, people are sleeping on him so much. It's weird that there's some hate on Bledsoe that I'm seeing, and that calling him a complete non-shooter and just kind of a defensive player who is just a strong little muscle hamster. And he's just an all around great player and is going to be one of the best players on that Milwaukee team. I mean, provided the fit works and everything, but the player Eric Bledsoe was a couple years ago is a very, very dynamic NBA player. And with the way Milwaukee plays defense, that's just another huge asset. It'll be interesting to see how Jason Kidd uses him, though, and how much he asserts himself and how much he is, to use a Wolves analogy, how much he's willing to kind of take a step back initially like Jimmy Butler has. So that's going to be exciting. The NBA and transactions never sleep. It's 12 months a year. Big moves are happening. First-round picks sliding all over the place. I'm excited to watch Milwaukee with Bledsoe.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot like when Dragic went to Miami, where people saw the three-point guards with Thomas Dragic and Bledsoe, and it didn't work out, and then Dragic went to Miami. He's putting together some really nice seasons. I think it'll be like that for Bledsoe, and we're just going to find out that the Phoenix Suns over the next couple of years, and over the last couple of years too, that they really have only cared about developing the new guys and haven't really paid attention to the veterans they have or building a team much in general.
Yeah, I think it's, we're going to look back and be like, what the heck was Phoenix doing? Kind of similar to what we were saying about Phoenix a few years back on the Dragic trade that you brought up. Once people see Eric Bledsoe in a playoff series and he just physically can take over at times, it's, I feel like that's what sticks in people's minds is what players do in the playoffs. And Milwaukee is going to be in the playoffs, and he's going to be a key part of that. So look out for the Bucks. The East is wide open.
Look out for the Bucks. Look out for the Wolves. Look out for the Wolves bench. We have our Dane's piece on the bench coming out tomorrow morning. And thank you so much for coming on. And this has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast.